Good evening, it's Sunday, September 19th, 2021. Coming up, from Kabul to Wisconsin, one of the 20,000 refugees at Fort McCoy speculates about why so many people were caught off guard by the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, in spite of warnings.
If we would have known that, yes, the United States is leaving after 20 years, everyone would have prepared themselves, we're going to leave, nothing happened, and boom, Biden came, they left. People were thinking that, oh, they're just saying that we're leaving, but they will not leave.
While many children have fallen behind on skills like reading during the pandemic, some Bay Area organizations are stepping up to fill in the literacy gaps.
Why is it important to read books?
So you can observe knowledge.
I'm Sharon Sabota, and this is the KPFA Weekend Evening News. 37-year-old Quagga Ghani is one of the 20,000 Afghan refugees staying at Fort McCoy in Wisconsin, along with her sister and her parents. Ghani reported for NPR and a number of American news outlets while also working with Amnesty International. And as the main breadwinner from her family, she says she had to flee the country when the Taliban took over.
I used to go to places where I had to report from, and it didn't matter if it was dangerous or not, I had to go for my report and the stories that I was doing. So yeah, my mom was always worried. My dad, he was always worried about my security, and he thought that I will be a target. So when the Taliban came in, I had to flee. I had to leave the country.
Ghani says her journey from Kabul to Wisconsin has been anything but direct.
So we came out on 19th of August, and we went to Serena Hotel, stayed there for 4 days, and after 4 days, we got an escort taking us to the airport. And we came out around 7 p.m., and we got to the airport around midnight.
And hold on, I just want to pause and interject here for our listeners, because we talked about this, and you told me it was a 30-mile span, and it took you about 6 hours, right, for the 30 miles.
Yes, it was because a lot of people were trying to go to the gates, and they wanted to go through the checkpoints. Some people were walking, some people were going in the van, some people were going in their own cars. So there were so many people on one road, and there were Taliban checkpoints as well. They were shooting to scare off people so they won't go in and they won't rush into the gates, and a lot of mess. It was a nightmare. We got to the part where the American soldiers were, and then we went through their checks, their search. They searched our bags, they searched us. In the beginning, they told us that this gate was only for those who were green card holders and American passport holders, or the people who had American visa on their passport. Because we had an escort with us, and they already had spoken to the American soldiers, and they knew that who we were, and they knew that we were working for the American radios, and a lot of people with us were working with the embassy. We got on the buses, and we went inside the airport where everything was destroyed. The airport was not like the airport that we had seen before. Everything was broken, everything was ruined, there was garbage everywhere.
Do you think that all happened in the days where the transition of power took place, or how did the airport become destroyed?
The first day when the Taliban came to Kabul, this is what happened. A lot of people rushed into the airport, and people were trying to get on a plane and get out. It did not matter who the person was, just everyone was rushing towards the airport. And a lot of people died because they were sitting on the wing of the plane.
There must have just been such a level of desperation, it sounds like.
Yeah, like people were so desperate. They didn't know how to run away from the fear of the Taliban. They would move us for a little bit, and then we would stay for like an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, and then move for 10 minutes, and then stay behind for another few hours. And we stayed the night there. My mom and dad, they were both so cold. It was so cold at the airport. We didn't know because we didn't have anything warm with us. No jackets, no sweaters, no blankets, nothing with us. And we had to stay the night there at the airport on the ground. I found white sheets there. And then I brought two of them, and I had to cover my parents and my sister. And then we spent the night like that. And in the morning, we went through our biometric, and then they took us to the gate where we had to get on a bus and then get on a military plane. And we went through biometric and then stayed at a gate for a few hours, and then they took us near the airplane and we got on a U.S. military airplane.
How many times did you have to go through that biometric process during your journey?
Twice in Kabul, went through biometric. From Kabul, when we got to Qatar, there was another biometric. And from Qatar, when we got to Germany, there another biometric. From Germany, when we got to Washington, D.C., another biometric. And now, when we are in Wisconsin, we did another biometric.
From there, Ghani and her family traveled to Doha, Qatar, where they spent a day and a night, and then to Germany, where she says they spent four long days in poor conditions.
When I got to the airplane, I asked the soldier, I was like, where are you guys taking us? And then he said, you're going to Germany. Okay, we're going to Germany. We couldn't take a shower, and there were so many people from villages, from the mountains who had come, who had never seen a life in a city and how to use bathrooms. They did not understand anything. So the bathrooms were dirty. The place where they had these toilets, they smelled so bad. You couldn't pass by that place.
The pandemic is a real thing even there, so there's no room to take any COVID precautions, you said.
No, nothing. There was nothing. Everybody was sleeping right next to each other. Right next to each other, we were all sleeping. And people felt lice in their heads, and a woman had 10 children with her.
Then they went to Washington, D.C., where Ghani says she was afraid of another obstacle.
When we got to D.C., we waited for around 5 hours at the airport. They took our documents from us and put it in a yellow envelope which said deportation papers.
And tell us what that was like.
So when they gave me that envelope, my heart dropped. And I thought, there's something wrong with my documents. I don't know what's wrong, but there's something wrong. That's why they gave me this envelope. And the second day, they called out my name, and I went and I asked what's going on. They said, gather yourself and tell your family to come, all of you get together and come here and sit here. We went and took our stuff with us, and we sat there for a few minutes, and a military guy came with all our passports and a stamp of humanitarian peril on our passport. And then I was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, a sigh of relief.
There was nothing wrong with my documents.
Finally, more than a week after leaving home, the family made it to Fort McCoy in Wisconsin. Ghani says that while she's relieved to be in a safe, warm place where she feels well cared for, she misses simple things like bread and tea and is craving for transparency and clarity.
More than 20,000 people are living here. And yeah, I am living with three other families.
Okay.
We are the fourth family living on top in a barrack. In the bottom, there are four other families living.
You all leave and go someplace central to get your meals during the day, and then you come back to your bunker. Is that how it works?
Sometimes we go eat in the DFAT. We have like food carts every week. So my father goes there and takes all these four carts and brings the food into the place, and we sit and eat together.
Tell us about the food. Give us a sample of the menu.
The food here is okay. It's not enough for us. The amount is very less. And sometimes they mix the food, like they mix rice and eggs. In the morning, in breakfast, there is rice with cooked eggs, and it's all mixed up that you cannot have. And they don't give us bread, which is very, very important.
You said usually at home you'd have bread and tea all the time, right? And those staples are not available.
Yeah. Tea, sugar, and bread. We did not have anything else at home. We always had these three things at home to eat. So we are used to bread. Africans are used to bread. Even if we have pasta cooked at home, we will have bread with that. You can understand. There are so many people to take care of. People are here with a lot of children.
Yeah.
Who do not understand what rules are, because they have been living in villages, they have been living in mountains. They have to take care of that. They have to take care of food. A lot of people are sick here. A lot of people have health issues like diabetes. A lot of people are on insulin here. And plus, it's getting cold nowadays, and they're taking care of bringing warm clothes for these people. And on top of that, they are taking care of all the paperwork at the same time.
The treacherous travel conditions, I can imagine people could get even the simple flu from that, let alone those conditions under a pandemic.
I haven't heard of the COVID, but yeah, measles were spread, and that's why we got the measles shot, because they want to stop the spread.
And then they made you take a couple of other vaccinations, right?
Yeah. We had three vaccinations. I don't know what were the other two for, but one was for measles. I know that. The COVID testing is like, we had like seven or eight COVID tests since the day we've been on the run.
One of the things that you shared that's been really hard is that you really haven't known your next step, right? Like, you go to the airport, you know you're leaving, you don't know where you're going, you end up in one country after the next, and now you're kind of in a holding pattern again, and you don't know how long you're going to be there.
Yes.
What's that like?
Yes, that's one of the biggest problems that we've been having, that nobody tells us what's going on. Nobody's telling us how long we're going to stay here. Nobody's telling us how long is this process going to take. As I told you, that I did not know when we were leaving for Germany. Nobody told us anything, just told us to line up. So we're going to the airplane. We got to the airplane, and then I asked, and then they told me that we're going to Germany. Or else, nobody was telling us anything. Just get on a plane, get on this plane, get on a bus, line up, we're leaving. Where are we leaving? Why are we leaving?
That's gotta be so anxiety provoking, right?
It is, like, seriously. Until I got to Wisconsin, I was not sure if I'm going to get to the U.S. or if they're going to take me somewhere else. I swear, I did not know.
You bounced through four countries, right, in multiple days. And now you also don't know when you're leaving Wisconsin.
Yeah, I don't know.
So you've landed a journalism human rights fellowship in Berkeley, you said, but you're not even sure when you might get here, and you've heard conflicting reports. What are the reports about when you might be able to leave and come to California, where you have some family and you have this fellowship opportunity?
Oh, well, now they are trying to find some answers for us, because it's not just me. As I told you, that more than 20,000 people are here, and they all have the same question. When are we leaving? When is the process ending? What is our last step here, you know? They told us when we were getting vaccinated that we're going to be here for 21 more days, so they can see how the side effects are, how it's going to affect our body. And after that, there's going to be a proper medical checkup.
I almost feel like the finish line keeps moving.
Exactly. So when they took us for a vaccine, we thought this is a medical. But no, it was not the medical. It was just the shot.
In the same way that Afghan refugees aren't getting the clear answers they are hoping for in fleeing the country, Ghani says the people of Afghanistan were not at all prepared for the United States' departure.
We're going to leave, nothing happened, and boom, Biden came, they left. People were thinking that, oh, they're just saying that we're leaving, but they will not leave.
While many people feel that the United States should have never been in Afghanistan to begin with, Ghani says she wishes they would have stayed longer.
This is my own personal opinion. I wanted them to stay for another 20 years, because right now, in these 20 years, people like me and people of my generation understood what education is and what their rights are, what are women's rights, what are human rights, what are children's rights. We had created a very nice lifestyle for ourselves. And the people in the cities had learned about rules, regulations, rights, education, rights to education, everything. This was our generation. And 20 more years, there would have been a new generation, and we would have given them all these perspectives, all these ideas, we would transfer that to the next generation. And then from there, it would go to the next, to the next, and to the next. But them pulling out now made us go back into the 90s.
You mentioned before that boys and girls were both going to school, and now some of the boys that you knew were still going to school. Some of the girls weren't doing that anymore, or they even left university. You gave me a story about that. Do you think it's the fear itself that's holding them back, or do you think that we've heard a lot of terrible things about Taliban?
The history that we have with Taliban.
So people don't trust them at all.
The fear that we have. People don't trust them. Like I told you, I personally do not believe on whatever they're saying. I will never believe it.
Earlier, I was asking you because the Taliban is saying that they're going to be kinder now and more humanitarian. And you started laughing. Tell me why.
Yes, I laughed because I never trusted. When they were sitting in Doha and saying that there will be women's rights, there will be girls going to school, there will be women going to work. I said, no, it's not going to happen. And it's not happening. You probably are hearing about what's going on right now. Women cannot go to work. Girls are not going to school. Girls are not going to universities. Even if they are going to universities, there is segregation. They have curtains between the boys and the girls. The social media tells you everything.
Does everybody still have access to social media?
Yeah. There are a lot of women right now fighting for their rights. They don't care if they're going to be killed, they're going to be beaten up, but they still are working.
That's what I was wondering about, because I can feel the sense of resiliency and strength in your voice. So I wonder, how do you suppose that the women who are left behind will fight back?
Well, the women have understood a little bit about their rights and their values in the society. So those women who have understood will not stay calm. They will not shut up. They will raise their voices, and they will keep raising their voices, even if they get killed.
As thousands of refugees will at some point be leaving military bases and joining communities around the country, I ask Gunny what Americans can do to be supportive.
Just give them a chance to understand the rules and regulations. Just have some patience for them. They will understand everything gradually.
And the other thing that you said to me that I thought was really illuminating is that you said just be forthcoming, right? And be transparent with information.
Yes. Also that. Please be transparent as much as you can so we understand what the real situation is and what really is going on so we can understand things better. And we can prepare ourselves for whatever is coming.
That's Quagga Gunny speaking from Fort McCoy about her journey from Afghanistan to Wisconsin. Gunny says that when she leaves Fort McCoy, her next stop will be in Berkeley, where she will pursue a 6-month journalism and human rights fellowship. You're listening to KPFA 94.1 FM in Berkeley, KFCF 88.1 FM in Fresno, K248BR 97.5 FM in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. I'm Sharon Sabota. President Joe Biden has issued an executive order threatening to impose new unilateral U.S. sanctions on Ethiopia and Eritrea. KPFA's Ann Garrison has the story.
Unilateral sanctions, meaning sanctions not approved by the U.N. Security Council, violate international law codified in the U.N. Charter. However, Biden wrote that the U.S. writes its own laws just as it imposes its own sanctions, unilaterally. Previous U.S. and EU sanctions have targeted individual officials or military officers for their roles in the Ethiopian conflict. But in his most recent order, Biden threatens to sanction governments, political parties, or military or security forces that he deems to be prolonging the conflict or abusing human rights. The worst of such sanctions can block a nation's access to medical supplies and foodstuffs, as has been done to Iraq, Cuba, and Venezuela, or the freezing of a nation's assets in foreign banks, as has been done to Libya, Venezuela, and now Afghanistan. In a recent webinar organized by the Sanctions Kill Coalition, Sarah Flounders of the International Action Center reported on new sanctions on Afghanistan.
What did the United States do as the last troops, the last planes left Afghanistan? They froze all of Afghanistan's money. $9 billion that is held, Afghanistan's money, in U.S. banks were frozen. Also, their money in European Union banks, Swiss banks, all were immediately frozen by the very countries that had made war and ripped apart Afghanistan. Then on departing, they cut off everything, all money whatsoever, and then announced that Afghanistan, as they were leaving, was totally without medicine, without food, and an economy that was totally import dependent. So this is sanctions in a new form, where they say all of your funds are frozen, and also any money coming from the World Bank, the IMF, UN aid organizations are frozen. The vaccines that were coming through COVAX, frozen. And only 1% of the population, all these troops there, but only 1% of the population was vaccinated. So you see what U.S. domination and control means. They literally make war on the whole population.
Only time will tell whether the U.S. and its allies will go to such extremes to control the Horn of Africa. But President Biden has heightened the threats. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed wrote an open letter in response asking Biden to respect Ethiopia's sovereignty, but Biden has not responded and the letter has not been published by Western press. In Berkeley, for Pacifica, KPFA Radio, I'm Ann Garrison.
Longtime KPFA programmer and KPFA apprentice instructor Frank Sterling was tased and arrested at an Antioch park while protesting a going-away party for the city's police chief on Friday. KPFA's Ann Garrison has more.
Longtime KPFA programmer and KPFA apprentice instructor Frank Sterling was tased and arrested while protesting a going-away party for Antioch's police chief in an Antioch park on Friday. The police chief, Tammany Brooks, is moving on to become deputy police chief in Boise, Idaho, but protesters say he is fleeing an investigation into his conduct as chief. A YouTube video included a city councilman's parting words while protesters hollered and waved signs and images of victims of police brutality. Protesters also said that they were contacting the Boise Police Department about who they've hired.
Some beat. Music starts playing. I just want to say I've been getting to know T for 25 years since having been on the city council while he was an officer, and also having owned the newspaper here in Antioch. And I wanted to just say how professional he has been in his position as chief and dealing with the media. Very responsive, which is great because that way you guys get to know what's going on. Very transparent and provides the information as timely as he can. And that's been great in the relationship there. But also, he's been my friend, and I appreciate it. I miss you already. I know you're in a better and bigger place. It's actually twice as our city in the Boise there. I wish you luck and God's blessings, you and your family.
Near the end of the video, celebrants appear to charge protesters who fight back, and police appear to arrest three protesters. Frank Sterling said that is his interpretation of what happened, but he doesn't want to speak further before consulting a lawyer. He was released from jail on Friday evening. In Berkeley, for Pacifica, KPFA Radio, I'm Ann Garrison.
The U.S. Census Bureau estimates that just under 77% of Californians are literate, which means that just over 20% are not. And many believe that children have fallen behind on reading and literacy skills during the long pandemic. Anna Kroshkin is the owner of Communication Across the Bay Area Speech Clinics. She says she realized that children in her community of Concord were particularly in need of access to books. In partnership with another local organization, Kroshkin set up a free book tent in Todos Santos Park in downtown Concord last Thursday with the simple goal of introducing literacy and book accessibility to those in her community most in need.
We are here tonight to promote literacy. We gave away over $1,000 worth of free books. We sent kids on a scavenger hunt to build vocabulary and gave free prizes today. Everything is 100% free.
And how often do you do this, the literacy project?
Twice a summer. And then we donate books to Monument Crisis Center, but we've only done it twice this summer for the farmers market.
Okay, and how many books do you think you gave away today?
25 boxes of books, so probably 50 books in each box at least. But we did it a week ago on Tuesday, and on that time we gave away $800 worth of books. So between the two thousands, I don't know. I'll let you do the math. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
Thousands. No one was counting. I don't know.
What and why is it important? I mean, I can guess, but from your perspective, sure. Why is it important to do this project in this community?
Absolutely. So evidence tells us that the earlier we can start reading and talking with our kids, the better their outcomes will be. And so we're trying to build vocabulary. We're trying to get families reading together. If they can read together even just 5 minutes a night, it's going to help them with their education. So we live in a community where literacy is everything. And we just are here to promote and make sure that everybody has books available to them.
And there's a socioeconomic diversity in this community for sure, with a lot of people not having probably the access.
We made sure that we had bilingual books, many, many Spanish, English bilingual books. We had some Chinese books as well here. The ones that we couldn't get donated, we bought and gave them away.
And then in terms of the socioeconomic piece, mm-hmm. sometimes I think people forget that there's people in need in places like Contra Costa County.
Right. Right.
And what would you like to say to such people who might not think that there's a need in communities like this?
We have identified many, many families in my career, kids who've never even touched a book. They don't know how to hold a book. They couldn't tell you a page from the cover of a book. And these are 5 and 6 year olds. They don't have books at home. So how can we expect them to be able to read and do well in school if they don't enjoy it? Literacy has to start early. And so we do have diversity in our community. That's why Todos Santos Plaza was our target.
Mieron Shipa from Concord and her daughter were among those that took advantage of the free book tent.
It was very nice because they're kind of expensive, and my daughter, she likes to read a lot of books, so it was a good opportunity.
Mieron's daughter spoke about her reading treasures.
I'm Elora and I'm 9 years old.
What book did you get today?
I think I got I am a Brown Ghost Dreamer, and I forgot the rest of them. I think I got a Judy Moody book, and I think I don't remember the other ones.
Okay, why is it important to read books?
So you can absorb knowledge.
So you can absorb knowledge? And do you love to read?
Yeah.
And the weather. In the San Francisco Bay Area, partly cloudy tonight with lows in the mid-50s, clear and sunny tomorrow with a high of around 80 degrees. In the Fresno area, partly cloudy tonight with lows just below 60 degrees, sunny tomorrow with highs of around 90 degrees. That's it for tonight's newscast. Thanks to Ann Garrison for helping to prepare tonight's news, and to our technician, Miko, and to you, our listeners, for tuning in. I'm Sharon Sabota. Good evening.